You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and joining me on today's episode is Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, I'm doing well. I want to, before we get going here, I want to give a shout out to an article that we published on Slash Film recently. It is a big oral history about the final season of Battlestar Galactica, which is the show that I've never seen, but I know has a ton of fans. Did you ever watch that show, Ryan?
No, I never got into it, but it is the people I know that are into it. They are like into it. That is, you know, yeah. And that show gets a little bit lost in the conversation as far as that, like, golden age of TV, early 2000s, late 90s, and that really was one of those shows of that era for sure that deserves to be in that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are a fan of that show, if you've seen it, I would highly recommend checking that out. I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes as well. Okay, so let's get into the news. It's been like 2 weeks since we did a pure news episode of the podcast, Ryan, so we have a lot to catch up on. The way that I've structured the show today is we're just going to be talking about trailers in the first half and then a bunch of news stuff, some of which broke earlier today in the back half. So let's talk about the trailers for a little bit. Alien Romulus put out a trailer not too long ago. You know, my relationship to the Alien movies, I would call it like hit or miss. Like, obviously, I love the first two. I've never seen Alien 3. Don't know if I'm really missing out on much there from the critical consensus on that movie. Really enjoyed Prometheus at the time and kind of thought Alien Covenant was a little bit of a step down. So it's been a while since I've like fallen head over heels for an Alien movie, but man, I was very impressed by this trailer and I was like, oh my God, I'm actually like actively excited about seeing an Alien movie in theaters again. So I'm very glad that this movie A, exists, B, seems to look pretty good, and C, is playing in theaters instead of going straight to Hulu. So walk me through your thoughts on this one, Ryan.
Yeah, you and I have slightly different views on the Alien franchise. I generally love it, and I am maybe the world's foremost Alien Covenant defender, I say, looking at my Walter Funko Pop and with my Alien Covenant poster behind me. Oh my God, did this trailer hit all the beats for me. I love that it's like short, tired of like 3-minute trailers. I love that it's just like a minute long. And it's like mostly just like one tracking shot, then with a bunch of weird stuff thrown at you with no context. Like that shot of like the 50 face huggers like running in the hallway.
Yeah. And where they're like jumping up. Oh, man.
Yes. Like, let's go. And then every single thing Fede Alvarez has said about the movie, he did a bunch of interviews. Like everything I hear him say, I'm like, you get it. Like you know, he even had like a wonderful explanation about like how, you know, the technology in Prometheus and the ship made sense because like the richest man in the world spaceship versus like, you know, a trucking cruise ship and like the original Alien. I don't know, just everything he's saying. I'm like, and then it seems like both Ridley Scott and James Cameron really liked it when they saw it. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, very psyched about this. Okay, so another trailer that came out recently, you're talking about 1-minute trailers. I think this is another one that was very short, is the latest trailer for The Penguin, which is the new DC show that's going to be on Max later this year, starring Colin Farrell, where he reprises his role as the Penguin from Matt Reeves' The Batman. What did you think about this one?
You know, I don't get the most love in the world for saying this. I was not a big The Batman guy. Although I do think that initial teaser trailer for The Batman is one of the best teaser trailers of all time. I'm a little like mixed on this. Like, I do think it looks like a decent crime show, but I don't even know that it's one of those things that feels really unnecessary to me, right? Like, it feels like you're using the success of that show to just be able to make like another show, but building off that universe, which I get it, like synergy wise or whatever, but I don't know. I felt a little mixed on it.
I'm excited about it because it seems to me, I mean, we don't really know too much about the show at this point, but from everything that I've seen so far, and especially this most recent trailer, it kind of just seems like a down and dirty crime show. And it's like pretty small scale, it appears to be. And like this latest trailer, especially with Colin Farrell just sitting there, basically doing like a James Gandolfini in The Sopranos kind of riff, you know, talking about honor and respect and loyalty and legacy and things like that. I was just like, oh man, this seems like catnip for me. So I hope it ends up being really good. I know Matt Reeves is like involved in it, I think just as an executive producer or something. I don't remember the folks who are actually like show running this one.
It shifted a little bit, I think. Yeah. I think a couple of people dropped it. But anyway, I don't know. I really like Colin Farrell's commitment to this character in a weird way. Like he seemed to be the one that was like, I want to put on all this makeup and do, you know, I don't know. So I'm like, I like the cast. I mean, I like the people that are in it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Shout out to Kristen Milioti, who has always been enjoyable in pretty much everything. And I don't think she's quite like a household name yet, but I really enjoy watching
her. She should be more famous than she is.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so George Miller is returning to blockbuster filmmaking with Furiosa, and another trailer for that came out not too long ago. I think this was the second trailer. There was a lot of talk after that first trailer, including on this podcast, about the VFX and like the, you know, how the movie looks and all that. And I think you and I are a little split when it comes to this one. If I recall correctly, you and I were kind of like on opposite sides of the fence when this first dropped, and we talked a little bit about it in the Slash Film Slack. So tell me your thoughts on this latest Furiosa trailer.
I think that original Fury Road trailer is, you know, for a thing that so many of us didn't really, you know, how many of us were really been thinking about Mad Max, you know, in the years leading up to that, and that trailer just kind of comes out of nowhere, and you know, visually you're like, holy, you know, that's what sticks out to you in that first you to this day, even and you know, almost 10 years on. And yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of cool stuff going on. I love the people involved. I like that Hemsworth being weird, but yeah, it has a very like digital look to it. Like, it, you know, I have no problem with CGI. It's just that like, I think that in certain environment, it needs to look a little more tangible sometimes. And I think here it kind of doesn't, but also at the same time, like anyone who has read or looked over what George Miller went through to make through Fury Road and the hell that was making that movie. And like the dude's like, what, 78 years old. I just don't know if it's even possible for him to do that again. So I think that if this allowed him to actually make the movie, whatever, I'm willing to reserve judgment until I actually see it, but I am a little underwhelmed, I find, at this point.
I was pretty underwhelmed after the first trailer, but I gotta say, I'm pretty amped up after the second one. I thought this one definitely, I don't know, something shifted for me, and maybe it was just my own perception of what he's doing with this movie and like an acceptance or something on my part of what this thing is going to look like. But for some reason I was getting 3,000 Years of Longing vibes from like the look of it, which is Miller's previous movie. Which I liked a lot of. I didn't really love the film overall, but I liked a lot of aspects about that, including the sort of high fantasy, super heavily stylized kind of look to several chunks of that movie. So it seems like he's kind of applying that aesthetic or something, that filter almost, on what he's doing here in terms of like really bumping up the saturation and things like that. So I'm not really sure about the story, if it's going to be better than Fury Road. I hope it is, because my thing that I've said on the podcast a bunch of times is like, I kind of am not super enamored with the actual storytelling in Fury Road as much as the filmmaking is like bravura and incredible and like jaw-dropping, and nobody's ever done anything, you know, quite like it before. So I'm hoping that the story is a little bit better. And yeah, like you, I'm on board for the cast and all of that. And so I'm a little bit more positive on this one. And I hope that that positivity, I'm able to like ride that into Valhalla and the actual movie itself, and that it won't disappoint me too much. So, okay. Speaking of potential disappointment, tell me about your thoughts on the Acolyte trailer. This is the first trailer we have for a new Star Wars show by Leslie Headland, who worked on Russian Doll. And this is the one that I think a lot of people have been sort of like crossing their fingers for, holding out hope for, because I believe this is the first live action look at the High Republic era of the Star Wars universe. And this show is supposed to be taking place, you know, I think 100 years before the prequels or something. There's not really supposed to be a lot of tie-ins to different characters. It's basically what we've been asking for a long time from Lucasfilm. Like, show us something new, show us something that is disconnected from everything that we've seen before. So what did you think about this first look at The Acolyte?
Boy, your setup there with potential disappointment. I am fully on board for this, man. I'm a big High Republic defender, by the way. I don't know if defender is the right word, but I was enamored with the High Republic when Lucasfilm first like announced the initiative. I think the trailer they put out back in 2020, sort of announcing it and explaining how much work they put into it. I think the only problem with the High Republic is the novels have gotten out of hand. Like, it's hard for the average person to sort of get a grip on it, but I think the High Republic's cool as hell, and I like this trailer a lot. I am very, very, very excited for this show. Now, I did not know how I was going to feel. I had no idea what it was going to be. Boy, am I optimistic about this one. I think, again, this goes to my whole thing of that I just wish it were a movie and not a show, but, like, other than that, this looks like some Star Wars I can really get behind. Like, you know, we haven't seen that many lightsabers on screen in a long time, you know, maybe not since like Attack of the Clones and, you know, I don't know. So some of the stuff is really compelling, and it looks very dark, and the guy who scored Us and Get Out is doing the score for this, which is pretty cool. Like, I think that like speaks to the darkness of it. And yeah, I'm into it, man.
I like some aspects of this. I like this sort of wuxia, you know, martial arts kind of glimpses that we get in this. I like all the lightsaber stuff. I like Carrie Ann Moss looking like a total badass and doing some like hand-to-hand things that it looks like we haven't quite seen done in Star Wars properties before. But like, especially the beginning of the trailer where like it appears to be set in, you know, the same kind of area as like the prequels, with as far as like is it Coruscant, is that how you pronounce the
yes, Coruscant,
the whatever that sort of capital city area is, and there's like a bunch of kids in Jedi robes just like sitting around, and I'm like, oh man, the look of this just kind of reminds me of the prequels in a bad way, because I'm not a huge fan of the prequels. I didn't really grow up with those movies in the same way that the generation below me did, and certainly don't have like the level of attachment to those movies that a lot of folks do. But yeah, I so like conceptually, I'm more interested in this than I am based on what I saw in this trailer. I think I'm pretty like right down the middle, like, ah, this could go either way for me. But yeah, I guess that's just one guy's reaction. So, I don't know. Is there like an aspect, since you've, taken the dive into the High Republic and read a lot more about it than I have, Ryan, is there like one aspect of that era of storytelling that you're excited to see come into the flesh, I guess?
I think what's a little like almost confusing is that like and I wrote up a little thing for a sort of priming audiences about like what the High Republic is, but what's complicated is what I've heard is this show takes place at the very end of the High Republic era. So like our first live action version of it is like the tail end of that era. So like roughly about 100 years before the Phantom Menace, whereas like the bulk of the storytelling takes place like 200 or 300 years before. And like it has been described as like the Jedi Knights of the Round Table era. This is when like there was a relative time of peace in the galaxy and there were a lot of Jedi. And so I like that idea of seeing like the Jedi at the height of their power, you know, which is because like even Phantom Menace, you're seeing it at the just absolute end of that. You know, there's already like a lot of like bitterness against the Jedi and things like that. And so I like the idea of seeing like the Jedi as the rulers and law in the galaxy. But again, it does seem like we're kind of coming in at the end of that rather than like sort of seeing that at like its height. So, you know, I'm interested to see how that's depicted and sort of like, is this enough to get people to go back and read the books and get interested, you know, sort of reverse engineer it in that way? I don't know, but I like this era, so we'll see.
I can tell you right now, I'm definitely not doing that. I just like straight up don't have time. So I'm hoping that the show like stands enough on its own, kind of in a similar way that Andor did, where like you don't necessarily have to have seen Rogue One to like understand, you know, the vibes and what's going on.
Yeah, and I'm certain that'll be the case here. But yeah, like there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot like for people, if people find themselves like enamored with this era, there's a lot to dig into. I can say that much.
Cool. Okay, so a trailer that came out, I think, earlier this morning is the Bad Boys 4 trailer with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. I did not see Bad Boys for Life. I've seen the first two Bad Boys movies, but for some reason, I guess it was because it came out like right around the time that the pandemic was really like in full swing, or early days of it anyway. I missed Bad Boys for Life. So I feel a little disconnected from this franchise now, because it's been, you know, several years, and I'm one movie behind. So Bad Boys Ride or Die is the name of the movie. So what's your relationship like to this franchise, and what do you think about this trailer?
I should say, and I'm sure you've had other people tell you this, Bad Boys for Life is better than it has any right to be. That movie is punching way above its weight class. Even now, I would say, you know, give it a watch if you haven't. It also came out in, I think, February, so it was like the last movie to make good money at the box office before the pandemic hit. But I like this trailer. It looks like a blast. It looks like a continuation of the last one. I'm in it. I like these movies. Like, the first one is just a good cop detective movie. Bad Boys 2 is absolutely insane and fun. Like, Bad Boys for Life is, again, like, it's a genuinely good movie. Like, it is surprising how good it is. So yeah, I'm all in. Like, I think this looks like fun. And, you know, obviously this is like the first big Will Smith movie that's coming to theaters in the aftermath of everything that happened at the Oscars a couple years ago. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out, but not bringing that drama into it. I just think as a trailer, it looks like a damn good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I did like one aspect of this trailer that I wanted to give a shout out to. There's a shot near the end where I think it's Will Smith's character throws a gun to Martin Lawrence's character, and the camera seems to like almost be, it's a very like CG heavy shot. It's not done practically or anything, but the camera is like almost attached to the gun.
As yeah, it's like a GoPro gun shot.
Yeah. And it, you know, again, not practical. It's like very obviously CG, but it has that kind of like Bad Boys energy. It's like that. That's what I think of as like Michael Bay doing crazy, you know, visual flourishes and stuff like that. That's kind of like what I think of when I think about these movies. And I thought that part of the trailer really capitalized on that and sort of promises to the audience that it's going to bring some of that inventiveness and sort of like visual flair to it. The one thing that I'm not super excited about, visually speaking, is the what are they called? The it's like FPV drones or something. Those like basically like first person drones that you've seen in Solomon Ambulance. Speaking of Michael Bay, he used them there. I think I want to say they were either in Red Notice or The Gray Man, or maybe both. You know what I'm talking about, Ryan? Like this.
Yeah, I know. Sort of... I didn't see the Red Notice or Gray Man, but I hear you talking about like the kind of like hip newer drone shot type stuff.
Yeah, where it's like it flies through really small spaces and it's just kind of like gets really wacky and it's super fast and it feels like uncontrolled almost to me. I know that's probably a little bit of the vibe that these filmmakers are going for, to try to like make you feel like, oh, you're right there in the middle of the action. Isn't this all wild and bonkers and everything? But I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm becoming allergic to that particular type of drone shot in an action movie. And I'm really hoping it doesn't like catch on to the point that it shows up in every single one of these films moving forward, not just Bad Boys movies, but like the genre at large, because it's already sort of getting a little bit of a foothold. And I'm really hoping that goes away soon. So anyway, just a little pet peeve that I wanted to mention there. I don't know if anybody else feels that way. If you do, send us an email. Let me know. There are probably dozens of us out there. Dozens, I say. Okay.
Hey, can I shout something out real quick before we move on from trailer talk? Okay, so we don't want to spend much time on this, but before we move on from trailer talk, please, please, please go to /film right now. Go to the website. There is a trailer that dropped for a Chinese remake of Anaconda. It is crazy. And I know people say that. People say like, oh, this is crazy. No, for real. Like, I love the original Anaconda. And like, I've seen that movie is not exactly not unhinged. The trailer is truly nuts. So like, if you just want to see something weird that you just truly had no expectation of seeing today, please go look at that Anaconda trailer, because it is very bizarre.
I'm adding it to the show notes as we speak. So as always, I encourage people to go to slashfilm.com, just click around and find some stuff. But in the event that you you know, want to make it one step easier on yourself, you can now just click the link directly from the show notes. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about a bunch more movie news.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, so earlier today, we found out that the new Fear Street movie is coming to Netflix. There have been talk about this for a little while now, but now we have some more information on it. It is called Fear Street Prom Night, and this one's going to be set in the 80s. Instead of I think the first one was set in 1994, the second one was set in 1978, and the third one was set in 1666. This is the trilogy that came out on Netflix in 2021. It ended up on my favorite movies of the year list of that year. That's how much I love these. I sort of cheated by including all three of them as one entry. But I really, really loved what Netflix and specifically writer director Lee Janiak did with that franchise, that IP, if you will. And now a new Fear Street movie has been confirmed. So what's your relationship with that, Ryan? And what do you think about this new prom night class of 88 themed Fear Street movie?
I'm with you. I love the Fear Street movies, particularly the first two, and very particularly the second one, the 70s one, because that scratched that Friday the 13th itch for me. Mm-hmm. In a way that I haven't had in a very long time. So that was awesome. Yeah, I'm into this. I don't see why you wouldn't do this.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Netflix, you mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, because it's, you know, there's more books to do. There's fertile ground. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I agree. And I'm glad that they did, even though it took them a couple years to get around to doing it. The one sort of hang up that I have is that Lee Janiak is not returning. Apparently, she's not involved with this new iteration at all. So Matt Palmer is directing this time, and he's co-writing the script with Donald McLeary. Not super familiar with them, but I wasn't familiar with Janiak's work, really, before she stepped into the Fear Street director's chair the first time around. So I'm not really saying that as a value judgment, just kind of bummed that Janiak wasn't able to sort of continue this thing on her own. But who knows? I mean, I'm not even sure what else she's up to. Maybe she didn't want to. Maybe she's moved on to other things.
I'm sure they went to her, or at least talked to her about it. I tell you, the thing that I'm still immensely curious about is originally these were made by Fox before the Disney acquisition, and they filmed all three at once. I still am not clear on the release plan of what that would have been under Fox. Would it have been a movie every month over the summer? Would it have been one every 6 months? Were they just going to spread them out over a few years? I still don't know. Netflix obviously did it the right way for them. Mm-hmm. I'm still curious what Fox would have done with those movies.
Yeah, me too. And I wonder if maybe this movie, Fear Street : Prom Queen, might not get as much attention around it because it doesn't have that sort of unconventional rollout that the original trilogy did on Netflix. Now, potentially, this one has the opportunity, I guess, the potential misfortune of just falling into the Netflix algorithm and just kind of disappearing on folks. So if it's great, then we're for sure going to be shouting it out here. But I just hope that people have it on their radar, because if you haven't seen that original trilogy, go back and check that out first of all. And then, I think there's no reason for me really not to be excited about seeing them continue it with Fear Street Prom Queen. So you can find out more about who's involved with that and the official log line at the article in the show notes. Okay, next up, Disney's new Pirates of the Caribbean movie is going to be a total reboot. So you wrote this article. Tell me the latest on this.
Yeah, Jerry Bruckheimer has been the producer since the beginning. Every time he's out promoting something, he gets asked about it. And he said a little something this time. He was asked, whether or not he believes Top Gun 3 or Pirates 6 will happen first. both have been announced to be in development. And he just said, like, offhand that, like, the Pirates reboot, they're going to reboot Pirates, so, like, they don't have to wait on any specific actor, which makes it a little easier. So that seems to mean we're not going to wait on Johnny Depp or Orlando Bloom or any of these other actors who had been anchoring the other movies. Nothing else, no release date, no nothing like that, no plot details, but it does, at least he used the word reboot, which is significant. I think they'd kind of been hesitating to use that word for a while, but you know, we had known that Margot Robbie was developing one at one point that went away. Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick of Deadpool fame were going to write one and then bailed. Currently Ted Elliott, who co-wrote the original, had supposedly been writing one alongside Craig Mazin, who is known for, like, The Last of Us and Chernobyl. That movie is said to be, quote, weird, but again, we don't really know much. We don't know which one of these ideas has kind of won out. If one has won out, all we know for sure is that Disney has made $4.5 billion at the box office off of these movies. And despite how expensive they got at various points, it is a very profitable franchise, and I can see why they would want to keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the Johnny Depp of it all is why we haven't seen another movie in the past few years. But this does seem like the conversation that we had around, like, the Jurassic movies and, like, the Adam Driver movie. What was that? 61?
Is that what it was? 65 is what
65.
Oh, yeah, as in 65 million years ago.
Yes. How foolish of me. Yeah. So I remember us talking about that, of, like, you know, why does Jurassic Park basically have the, like, corner of the market on the idea of dinosaurs?
Yeah, why film, dinosaurs, right? Are not owned IP. Anyone can make a dinosaur movie.
And so the same thing comes to mind with this Pirates concept. Like, yes, Disney has made a lot of money on this specific iteration of Pirates, but, like, we haven't really seen any other studios try to take a crack at Pirates movies.
I'll tell you why. Any other, like, swashbuckling type movie that has been made that I can ever think of a certain budget has lost a ton of money. You know, you think of, like, what was the one that, forgive me, Gina Davis, I think, was in.
Cutthroat Island?
Cutthroat Island lost a bunch of money. Waterworld, to some extent, is a swashbuckler type movie. I think any sort of incarnation of Peter Pan over the last, you know, Robin Hood. I mean, a lot of the, you know, these. So I think that's probably why people haven't sort of approached. I don't know for sure, but you're not wrong that, like, someone could have been like, hey, maybe we could do a $25 million version of it that, you know, I hadn't really thought about that. It's an interesting point why someone hasn't tried to, like, build off the back of that.
I mean, Our Flag Means Death, the HBO pirate comedy show, came out since the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise was a big deal, and like, actually came and went. I think they officially announced recently that show is dead and gone. And that was great, and I just loved spending time with those characters and in that kind of world. So I'm just surprised that no other studio has really, you know, decided to take a crack at that. But anyway, yeah, I'm curious to see what they do with a depthless Pirates movie. Because there's just a lot of potential. There's a lot of potential fun to be had there.
Tons of potential. And it's worth repeating anytime it comes up. That first Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, one of the most entertaining popcorn blockbusters maybe of all time.
Certainly of this century. Yeah.
Just certainly. Like, it's so unbelievably good. Like, it, yeah. And it's to this day, like, you watch it today. It is just, I don't know what fates align to make that movie as good as it is, but, you know, if we got something that's a fraction that good again, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. So speaking of Jurassic, there was a rumor a little while back that now the Hollywood Reporter, I think, has confirmed that Scarlett Johansson is going to be running away from dinosaurs, is how we put it in our headline, in the new Jurassic World movie that's going to be directed by Gareth Edwards of the creator and Godzilla fame. We don't really know really anything more beyond that, what kind of character she's going to be playing, you know, who else is going to be in the movie, anything like that, the approach of what this thing is going to be. But what do you think about this, Ryan, as a big Jurassic guy? What do you think about the studio basically going after an A-lister and saying, hey, why don't you lead this thing for us moving forward?
I continue to be so, like, perhaps foolishly optimistic about this. I would guess that Scarlett Johansson at this point in her career, like, sure, franchise money's good. She doesn't need it. So I would guess that like she probably only did this because the script is probably good. And there seems to be a lot of that, right? Like Gareth Edwards isn't going to get a lot of say over the story, but so he was handed David Koepp's script and he must have been like, hell yeah, let's go. There's a video of Gareth Edwards talking about, he can't say much, but it was shortly after the announcement. He seems so stoked. And so I'm starting to get the sense that whatever David Koepp has come up with is pretty cool. So I don't know. I'm encouraged by the fact that they went out to her. I'm encouraged by the fact that she's seemingly going to sign on the dotted line. I really like everyone who's involved so far. Color me foolish. I'm into this. I really am hopeful here.
I'm shocked to hear that, Ryan, because Scarlett Johansson sounds expensive to me. And that seems to be, you know, one of the things that you focus on over and over again is like, what can you do to not, you know, boost the price points of sure. these gigantic blockbusters. So I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that you're, well, look, you're into this decision.
Scarlett's going to be expensive, yes. But I also think like if you're not paying eight actors $20 million, you can afford you can absolutely afford an A-list star in a Jurassic World movie. That does not. And also, like, for the record, I've talked about this before. Universal's been very, very reasonable with these Jurassic World movies. I think Jurassic World Dominion cost $165. You know, and compared to what other blockbusters have been costing as of late, that's so I don't really have a lot of concern that Universal's going to overspend here.
Okay.
And, like, Gareth Edwards is going to get a paycheck, but he's not, like, Spielberg. You know, like, yeah. You're not. So I hear you, but I also think that like, well, of course you're going to cast somebody. So, and I would also imagine maybe her deal is more back end heavy than it is front end heavy. We'll see.
True. Okay. So, let's see next up. Oh, Netflix is apparently making a sequel to, I can't even believe that this is really happening, but Happy Gilmore apparently is getting a sequel at Netflix. Adam Sandler, the classic 1990s golf/hockey comedy, Happy Gilmore, might be actually happening because Christopher McDonald, who played Shooter McGavin in the original movie, said that he basically ran into Adam Sandler recently, and Sandler said, "McDonald, you're going to love this." And he showed him the first draft of Happy Gilmore 2. So like whether or not that actually means that, you know, this thing is going into production imminently, we'll see what happens. But the idea that a script has been commissioned or has been written anyway is just kind of bonkers to me all these years later. And it kind of feels like Adam Sandler is like in many ways a different performer, a different guy than he was in the 90s. So revisiting that character just seems like a fascinating choice. I don't know. What's your take on this?
Okay. Happy Gilmore is probably the quintessential Adam Sandler movie. I rewatched it not 3 weeks ago, maybe. Still great. Like, still great. But it's also not one of, now, the only thing I'll say before I make the statement is that, like, much later comedies tend to be bad. Like, it's very hard to make, like, a delayed sequel comedy that is very good. That having been said, I don't think this is one of those things where it's too sacred to do another one. Adam Sandler's done some of his best work, you know, like of late. And these movies do gangbusters on Netflix, so I can see why they would want to do it. And I think that, like, obviously this was probably talked about in the past. If Sandler wanted to do it before, he probably could have. I think the fact that he's doing it now is kind of telling and interesting. I'm curious. Like, I consider me the blind optimist here, but I'm sort of curious, and I'd like to sort of see. I would be curious and see what this is. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just have no idea what this could even be. Like, is it going to be as simple as him just going back into that mode of performing and that sort of like full on antics, just like high energy insanity of, you know, 30 plus years ago or whatever? Or is it actually going to be more of like, you know, more of an introspective, I mean, it's still going to be comedic, obviously, but like more of a something that kind of like interrogates the personality that he was. And it could be like a really interesting piece of like meta storytelling or something of like the Adam Sandler now.
There's
going
potential
back to,
there.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. And I think so. That like, because I think the pitch is probably like it's some reunion, maybe some anniversary, some reunion PGA tour or something. Like, I don't know, something in my head had almost like a mockumentary style thing where they're like filming a documentary about, like, you know, those two guys reuniting on the tour or something. I don't know. I'm just throwing weird pitches out there, but I can see several different interesting versions of it in my head. Or maybe it's just a funny sequel. Who knows? But I think it's interesting that Sandler wants to do this now. So, you know.
Okay, so a couple more things to mention. One of them we don't really have to spend much time on. Ayo Edebiri, I recently found out I've been pronouncing her name wrong for at least a couple years now. She's one of the stars of The Bear. She's an Emmy winner. She had like the biggest year of anybody last year. She was in a bunch of different stuff. She is going to be directing on The Bear Season 3, which is shooting back-to-back with The Bear Season 4. This was a report from a couple weeks ago or something, like maybe the day after we recorded the most recent news-heavy episode of this show. And so we just really missed the ball on this one. Or sort of missed the window on this one. You can read more about that at Slash Film. I don't really think we need to like get into that in super detail here. I'm excited to see what The Bear has cooked up for Season 3 and Season 4. I kind of hope it doesn't really go much beyond that, like further beyond that. But I like the idea that Ayo is going to be able to get back behind the camera, or get behind the camera for the first time for this show. And sort of, you know, become more of a, like a multifaceted sort of multi-threat type of performer, media personality type of person, you know, entertainment figure. So I'm stoked about that. I love The Bear. So, okay, last story, Ryan, real quick. There's a live action Teen Titans movie coming from DC Studios. I believe her name is Anna Noguera is writing the script. She wrote a Supergirl movie for DC Studios.
Yeah, they seem to like her over there.
Yeah, so she wrote a Supergirl movie for DC that was scrapped, and then as soon as James Gunn and Peter Safran sort of inherited DC and, you know, have been establishing or sort of like laying the track for their shared DC universe, they hired her again to write a different Supergirl movie, and now she's going to be writing this live-action Teen Titans movie. So, I don't know, do you have any thoughts on a live-action Teen Titans film?
It seems like a slam dunk to me. Like, it seems like it's crazy it's taken this long to do it. Like, it's one of those things that Teen Titans have had a presence on TV for decades now, and with severe popularity. Like, I mean, of all the things that have been announced for this DC slate, like, a Swamp Thing movie is interesting. The Authority movie is weird. I'm curious to see what that looks like. But this seems like the one that's like, you know, rebooting Batman's tricky because it's been done a bunch. Like, this seems like a slam dunk to me.
This is one of those that reminds me of, it seems like a really smart long-term decision on Gunn and Safran's part, because it seems like they're actively courting younger, you know, the younger crowd. It seems like a lot of these DC announcements have been basically for people of our generation, people who grew up with this stuff, have familiarity with this stuff already. And like, you know, little kids don't really know what Swamp Thing is. You know what I mean? That's like a little bit more of a deep cut kind of deal. And even the idea of like turning Superman into the sort of bright, friendly approach that James Gunn seems to be doing here seems to be, I guess you could put that in the same bucket or something of like, all right, let's try to appeal to a younger crowd and like create new fans that can then become our long-term fan, like create a new generation of us's, if you know what I'm saying. So, and that seems like something that DC has not really been doing for the past, I don't know, 10 or 12 years or something. It just feels like they've not really been interested in cultivating younger audiences and getting people engaged with their stories or their cinematic adaptations from the ground up. And this seems like the first, I don't know, really concrete example of them saying, all right, let's actually actively go after, I don't know, preteens and like younger audiences who may look up to these Teen Titan characters and like use them as, you know, view them as aspirational figures in a way that maybe we did when we were kids looking up to the Superman, Batman, whatever of the world. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense totally, because again, you've had like a generation of kids that grew up on Teen Titans Go. You had a generation slightly before that that grew up on like the slightly more serious Teen Titans cartoon. And yeah, I think that like you look at like leveraging those like animated shows into actual like tangible fandom. Like, I think that's what happened with Spider-Man. I think that's what happened with X-Men. I think that happened with Batman to a degree after Batman the Animated Series, and like with a certain, with a different generation of fans that, you know, so I it makes every bit of sense to me. And I think there's a, that Titans live action show, I think that like served the audience that found it. I think there's a version of it that works probably better on the big screen and could break through in a more meaningful way. And I think Gunn sort of steering that ship a little bit is I can see that working really well.
Yeah. And I'm guessing the tone of this show, or this movie rather, is going to be very, very different from the tone of that show, where I think the big selling point was Robin says like, fuck Batman. Or
fuck Batman in that first trailer. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, yeah, I can't imagine that James Gunn and Peter Safran are going to be like, all right, you know what? We need that tone in a live action Teen Titans movie. So yeah, I guess we'll see how that goes. And like, just, I mean, I kind of am hoping that they go like full on kid friendly with it. Like, just really lean in and make it like super goofy and like actively anger a lot of people our age who are like, no, Teen Titans should be dark and gritty or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of hope that they really just like really like have the courage of their convictions and actually go for that younger crowd and like actively court them in a way that would be interesting to them and sort of meet them on their level and stop worrying so much about what a bunch of, you know, 40-year-old bearded people will think about about their decision making for a little while. So
I agree, man. This was one, like, it had been rumored for a while, but once it finally was announced, I'm like, yeah, my only real surprise is that this wasn't included in the initial slate announcement, like,
yeah,
that it was till now. But so yeah, we'll see. I'm curious.
Okay, all right, that's gonna do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about everything that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I'm gonna link to a bunch of stuff in the show notes for this episode. I'm actually not sure what the publishing schedule for this podcast is going to be in the coming days. Like, I may or may not be in and out based on some stuff that's going on in my life right now, so I'm not sure. I'll just be vague about it, and if we miss an episode or something over the course of this week, I apologize, but hopefully we'll be back to a regular schedule soon. Or maybe, who knows, maybe I'll be able to actually record regular episodes and nobody will ever know that anything weird is going on. So I'll just leave it at that. But Slash Film Daily is typically published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we will talk to you all tomorrow.